It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The fact is, America is finally back on the right track. But our country and our economy cannot take off like they should unless we transform America's outdated, complex, and extremely burdensome tax code. And that's why I'm here with you right now, tonight. Thank you. And we're going to fight and we're going to get those Republicans and maybe a few of those Democrats to raise their hand. And you're going to have so much money to spend in this wonderful country and this great economy. That is why we've proposed tax cuts that are pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, pro-family, and pro-American. We need a tax system that is fair to working families and that encourages companies to stay in America, grow in America, spend in America, and hire in America. Throughout the year, my administration has worked closely with Congress to develop a framework for tax reform that will deliver exactly that. More jobs, higher pay, and lower taxes for middle-income families and for American businesses of all size.
That was President Donald Trump last night speaking in Middleton, Pennsylvania, to a bunch of cross-country truckers. He actually chose to speak right before the evening news, sort of taking over the news cycle, but he really had some very good things to say. He talked about building infrastructure. He talked about the languishing of wages by middle-class workers. He talked about bad trade deals. You know, the thing that he knows best, which is really business. You know, I've never seen a man who is, you know, as wealthy and successful as Donald Trump has been privately, have such empathy for the regular common man. And I think that's one of the reasons when he went out into the country to campaign, he resonated with those. He doesn't look down on them. He doesn't talk down. He sort of empathizes. He seems to get it. I don't understand that. He was raised in privilege himself. So how does he get that? You know, I think one thing some have pointed out is that he's spent his life as a contractor. And so he works with the trades and he's just identified with working men in a way that most Washington, well, I would say 99% of Washington elites just don't. So anyway, that was the speech last night. He also unveiled the specifics of his tax plan. We'll get into that a little bit later, perhaps. I'm going to open the phone lines today, so I'm just giving you a heads up on that. Not going to do it yet, but we will do it in just a minute, the beginning of the next break. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840, and we're just going to talk. I'm going to do some Facebook and your email, and we're going to talk about the various news stories, but there's so much I want to tell you, so let me just jump in to tell you a few things before we do that. We talked yesterday about these new, the Trump challenge to the Congress that if you want this DACA Dreamer program, all right, we could talk about that. But in exchange for that, you must do the following. And that was, you know, tighten E-Verify, employer, making sure employers are employing legal residents at the very least, citizens. And not illegal persons, making sure that we don't have chain migration so that people come over and bring dozens and dozens and endless amounts of family members. You know, in the last mass amnesty that was granted under Reagan, the average number of people brought in by the people that got amnesty was six. So you can imagine six times whatever a problem. And so we've talked about this Dreamer program. It's a, depending on who's talking, it's around 700,000-800,000 people. And it's allegedly the people brought in by parents who, through no fault of their own, this is the story, you know, come into this country and now what are they going to do? And the argument has been, of course, the pushback is that that's kind of a, that's a dreamy description of, and not a very accurate one. It may cover some people, but it's certainly not all the people involved here. And I'll give you an example of that. News story broke just in the last 24 hours that an illegal alien who is accused of murdering a teenage girl in Greenville, she's 18-year-old Diana Martina Gonzalez. She was found shot to death in a wooded area of the town of Easley, South Carolina. Scherer allegedly murdered the girl in a wooded area because she had spread false rumors about him. And now we know he was a DACA. He was part of this Dreamer program. He was one of the so-called Dreamers. And they weren't allowed to deport him because he was part of that program. So he was protected by that. You'll be hearing more about that today. But this is the problem. It's an uneven thing. It is not... people who are trying to persuade you are always looking for persuasive language, something that presents it in the most positive light. But it's not... We have children, don't we, as Americans and as legal residents? Don't our children have dreams? And we certainly cannot... defer or harm the dreams of our kids by granting mass amnesty to a very large group. But Donald Trump said he's willing to talk about doing that in exchange for some actually very good immigration principles. And I think we, if we did not, we will do this today, put those principles, the things that he's asking for from Congress on our Facebook page, because I want you to see them. There, it's actually a really, it's enforcing the law as it stands. It's enforcing the borders. It's building the border wall. And by the way, Laura Ingraham just has a brand new book out in which, by the way, it's called Billionaire at the Barricades, The Populist Revolution from Reagan to Trump. But one of the things that she reports in that book is that when in a private meeting of the most senior Republican senators, Republican leaders laughed out loud at the idea that Trump's border wall would ever be built. They laughed out loud when they thought that his wall would ever be built, laughing at him. You will recall that this week there's been a real source of tension between Senator Bob Corker and the President of the United States. You recall that Bob Corker said something about the White House is like a daycare center, and someone must have been off duty, you know, when President Trump was tweeting. That's basically what he said. Well, Congresswoman Dianne Black responded to this. She said the Senate is an adult daycare center. The Senate is an adult daycare center. And I think that's great. I love that. And I think it's true. And I'll give you the reasons. Yesterday, there was a press conference held by Ken Cuccinelli, who's a frequent guest of ours. Ken runs Senate Conservatives Fund. But there were other people at that press conference, like Brent Bozell from Media Research Center, Richard Vigory, Jenny Beth Martin of Tea Party Patriots, and on and on we could go. And they have sent a letter to the Republican leadership, and I'm going to read a part of this to you. So this is really one of the most powerful letters I have seen, and I've signed a bunch of these letters. So, and I've written a lot of these letters, I have to tell you. But this is a really powerful letter. And they did a press conference yesterday, and this is how the letter starts. Dear Senator McConnell, 2017 has been a disappointing year for the millions of Americans who fully expected and had every right to expect real change in Washington. Republicans were given full control of the federal government. They, you, have done nothing. Worse, it is painfully clear that you intend to do nothing because, as is most apparent, you had no intention of honoring your solemn commitments to the American people. You were not going to drain the swamp. You are the swamp. Now, it goes, it's just goes on and on. You've done nothing. You don't even show up for work. While your attacks on those within the Republican Party who are attempting to keep the GOP's promises in the era of President Obama are now legendary, your current failure to deliver on the highest priority commitments to the American people is nothing short of shocking. Perhaps the greatest betrayal, and that is what it is, your failure to repeal Obamacare, the single most devastating piece of legislation against freedom ever crafted. America has not forgotten that Obamacare does not apply to you. You and your leadership team saw to that, even when far more ethical members of Congress tried to change that slippery exemption. Now, I'm skipping around, but I want to. You confirmed President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, but you've also left our judiciary hanging in the balance, with well over 100 vacancies on the federal bench and 50 nominees waiting action in the Senate. You all have performed the Herculean task of confirming 7. That's less than one judge per month. Perhaps more could be accomplished if you and the rest of your Gang of Five leadership team would work harder and require the rest of the Senate to do the same. The American people work 8, 10, 12 hours a day. How hard do their elected representatives work? On this, the 282nd day of 2017, you all have barely worked more than 100 days, and many of those days count coming in for a vote or two at 5:30. Many Americans celebrated Columbus Day. What would they think if they knew, if you told them, you have arranged it so you and your colleagues celebrate Columbus Week? In the real world, this level of performance would get you fired. And they're referring to the fact that the Senate's out this week. This is their Columbus Day break, just so you know. It goes on. In addition to not repealing Obamacare, not reining in spending and debt, not restraining then-President Obama's massive expansion of government, not reducing the power of the bureaucracy, especially the IRS, not only failing to secure our borders, but fighting for amnesty and open borders, you and your leadership team have proven to be abject failures. And, of course, it doesn't just leave, goes back into the primaries. It talks about all the money they have spent through the years to defeat conservatives. We remember your support for Arlen Specter, for Charlie Crist over Marco Rubio, and for Planned Parenthood's favorite independent candidate, Chairman Lisa Murkowski, over GOP nominee Joe Miller in Alaska in 2010. You and your leadership team, Senators John Cornyn, Roy Blunt, John Thune, and John Barrasso, have made war with your own grassroots while cynically refusing to honor one solemn pledge after another to the American people. It's time for you and your leadership team to step aside for new leadership that is committed to the promises made to the American people. America is too good for you to lead it. And that's the letter. I think this is powerful. And we're going to put this letter on our Facebook page so that you can read it. I would suggest you read it because it will really kind of congeal a lot of the things that you know, but it will quantify them and give you numbers and facts and figures. And that was a press conference yesterday. Meanwhile, Steve Bannon and troops are recruiting candidates all over the country to run against all of the people we just mentioned, plus more, trying to find conservative candidates like Judge Moore in Alabama to defeat and replace these candidates who have really betrayed the public trust. What else can I say? They have betrayed the public trust, and we're fed up. We're tired of it. They have nearly destroyed this country. I'm not sure at this point we can pull it back, but we're trying, and we're going to continue to try. I want to mention something practical before we take this break here. Goochland Tea Party in Richmond, Virginia, is one of my favorites. They're the group that gave us Congressman Dave Brat in an upset. Remember, Dave Brat was one of the first people in Congress now to upset an establishment Republican who was Eric Cantor, and that was so controversial that no one saw it coming. Great story, encouraging to many of us, and I see more of that on the horizon. Well, anyway, Dave Brat, a Congressman Dave Brat, and I will be speaking at Goochland High School Auditorium on October the 26th. And if you'd like to go, we'd love to see you. It's free. You just have to show up. It's October the 26th, 2017, 7 to 8:30 p.m. And, you know, you don't have to let anybody know you're just going to come. Just put it on your calendar, October 26th, Goochland High School Auditorium just outside of Richmond, and that's October the 26th. All right, so when we come back, I'm going to open the phone lines. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Sandy Rios, back with you right after this.
So What would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either. And that is a beautiful thing, too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
I'm a registered nurse, and I've been traveling to my job an hour both directions for over 30 years. AFR Radio has been my church, my worship time. For 28 years, I worked weekends only, and I made that choice for raising my children and being there for them. But AFR Radio was there to give me what I miss on the weekends in my church family, the worship sessions, the Word of God, and the fellowship. Just because you're not in church doesn't mean that you're not worshiping and being surrounded by a family.
Ensure that we impact even more lives by partnering with us during our three-day Share-a-thon starting October 17th. Listener-supported American Family Radio for your family.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The Boy Scouts announced they will open their ranks to girls, from Cub Scouts to Eagle Scouts, a move celebrated by liberals as the next evolution in Boy Scout culture. The Girl Scouts are furious. They accuse the Boy Scouts of a covert campaign to recruit girls. Of course, the Girl Scouts currently welcome boys who identify as girls. Mark Hancock is with Trail Life USA, a Christian scouting group founded after the Boy Scouts were conquered by the LGBT crowd. He tells me he's not terribly surprised by the decision, calling it a war on boys. On the positive side, I suppose the new gender-inclusive scouts will be able to forge new ground. Imagine the possibilities. Raising money for Planned Parenthood, wearing pink neckerchiefs and matching hats in the Nasty Woman March. And soon, a new generation of scouts will earn emasculation badges and social justice pins. I wonder if the Boy Scouts are going to start selling cookies, too. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Here's what we know. The House Office of Inspector General tracked the Awan's network usage and found that a massive amount of data was flowing from the networks. Over 5,700 logins by the five Awan associates were discovered on a single server within the House. The server of the Democratic Caucus Chairman, then Rep. Xavier Becerra of California, 5,400 appear unauthorized. All right, he is now the Attorney General of California. According to the reports, the Becerra server was actually housing the entirety of a clear violation, correction, the entirety of the servers of all the member offices that employed Imran or his associates, all of it, the entirety. It's a clear violation of House policy. This means that up to 40 or more members of Congress had all of their data moved out of their office server or out of their cloud storage system and onto the Becerra server without their knowledge or consent. The House OIG reported their findings to the Speaker's office, Democratic leadership, and the House Administration Committee, as well as the House Sergeant-at-Arms and Capitol Police in late September and early October of 2016, and Capitol Police began a criminal investigation into Imran Awan and his associates at that time. Capitol Police determined that the image they required Imran to provide was falsified, likely with deliberate attempt to conceal the activities that they knew were against House policy and the law.
All right, that was Congressman Scott Perry. And that's something that happened earlier this week. This is a story I have mentioned several times, and I said yesterday that it's not getting much coverage. And that is the IT workers in the House working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz disappeared out of the country, taking all kinds of equipment. Millions of dollars have been exchanged. A confidential email of some would argue, a substantial amount of our congressmen, especially Democrats, but also including Republicans, have been corrupted, used, co-opted. You just heard part of that in the explanation of Scott Perry. And here's the thing. I hit McConnell and the leadership in the Senate pretty hard a few minutes ago. But the problem is that Speaker Paul Ryan has decided that this particular scandal, which I have heard described, it's not just... You've probably heard it described as banking fraud, but it's espionage. It's Pakistani intelligence. It's the potential leak of thousands of email to foreign sources, insider things, intelligence committees. It's just an amazing, broad-reaching scandal. Doesn't capture it. A breach of our national security would probably capture it. And the problem is that Speaker Ryan has said that this is a distraction and he doesn't want to hold hearings. And so consequently, four congressmen met with Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch and a reporter from the Daily Caller, who's been the sole person really writing on this in detail, and had a press conference, not a press conference, they had a hearing not on the Hill, a hearing somewhere else because the Hill won't let them have a hearing on this. And the question is, why? Why wouldn't you have hearings on this? But they held a hearing, and the audio, the video of that is on our Facebook page. You want to see this. Now, this may not be being discussed by ABC, CBS, and NBC, but I think in time it will. I would say it's as much a breach of the public trust as Benghazi, although, you know, people, as far as we know, haven't died as a result of it. But our national security has been put at risk, among other things. So you'll want to go on our Facebook page and watch that. Honestly, you will. So just so you know, that's another thing. All right, I want to talk to you because I promised and because I just like, I enjoy those days when we talk. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Let's go to David in Texas. Good morning, David. Good morning, David. Sorry, we had a bad button. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. You're giving me a lot to think about this morning.
Yeah, I usually do, unfortunately.
No, yeah, you know, it just seems to me God's hand is against us. But I had two points I wanted to make. And first of all, I do think black folks have a point about the police need better training. These are regular folks that are thrust into positions of great stress, and that is no small job, no small task, and we need to train them better for the emotional, the psychological impact that they have to be confronted with and need to stand up to. And so, you know, I just think we have the ability and the resources, but there's no one talking about it. I haven't heard anyone talk about that. And then my second point is the wall along the southern border. I think America and probably Canada actually have some responsibility for paying for this because of Americans' appetite for drugs. That has driven the murder rate, corruption in Mexico and South America enormously. And, you know, just because of that. And, you know, we owe some responsibility for the cost of that. And I think the wall is a great idea, but not just for America's good. That would do Mexico and South America a lot of good. And I tell you what, that would be a good selling point if our leaders would speak to Mexico about that. And, you know,
David, let me interrupt you just a second. I'm a little confused. You're saying that we as Americans owe responsibility to financial responsibility to build the wall on the southern border. Is that your point?
I think in part, yes. Because,
well, I mean, do you think anybody's arguing with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, some people say that Trump, in fact, said Mexico should pay for the wall. But
well, all right. So, okay.
You know,
okay, I hear what you're saying. Dave, let's go back to the other situation. Police, you know, I have to say, yeah, I think police could always use better training. But as we watch these riots and you see the way, I don't know, I'm sure you have seen the videos of the way police are being treated right now just by kids on the street, the disrespect. When they wear their riot gear and all Black Lives Matter or Antifa comes, the restraint that they use is amazing to me. And we've often remarked there's somebody's training them. So I think it's actually pretty impressive how they're handling what they're handling right now. I would not be against any more training. Yes, more training, prepare them, whatever they need to equip them to keep order and to preserve their own lives, I'm in favor of. Dave, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Les in Alabama. Good morning, Les. How are you?
Good morning, Sandy. I wanted to follow up on an interview you had recently about the letter that Russell Moore has circulated around to pastors asking them to sign. Could you elaborate on that a little more, where that stands? What pastors signed it?
Oh, Les, it's a long, not off the top of my head, I can't tell you. There were a lot of really fine men on that letter. The president of the Southern Baptist Convention is on the letter. I don't think Russell Moore is taking credit for circulating it, but his name is on the letter, and it seems in conjunction with many of the themes that he seems to embrace, and I just heard his voice through that. That's my supposition. I think he's behind this. You know, Tony Evans, who I love dearly, is on that letter. A lot of Black pastors. The letter was sent to President Trump. And it was a letter demanding that he condemn the alt-right. And there's a lot more to the letter. But the problem, of course, is that the language of the letter is the language of the left. It's the language of CNN. It could be taken right out of the talking points of CNN or MSNBC. The alt-right, the word itself, is a construct of the left. It's a way to create a demon. I think the Black pastors on this letter were persuaded to equate that term with racists, with Nazis. And the left is using that word to paint a broad brush of condemnation to anyone on the right, including groups like AFA, FRC. We are considered that. So I think that they don't understand. I think many of the people that signed that letter, hopefully they don't understand that they are in that category of the alt-right that the president, I think it's fair to say that the president has condemned racism, Nazism, anything. He's done that repeatedly. So the letter, I think, is used to, he also said in the letter, they say that the president has placed three members of the alt-right in the White House. Well, I have to say, I know a lot of people in the White House. I have no idea who they're talking about. Perhaps I think Russell Moore would have been talking about Steve Bannon. And Steve Bannon is not a racist. And so the letter is based on, I'll be kind. I will say inaccuracies. I'll think that Russell Moore must not know that. He certainly is in D.C., so he knows that I'm sure he signed off on that letter. I don't believe those pastors have enough time in their lives to track all the ins and outs of what's going on in D.C. And so I see the hand of someone inside the Beltway who actually has an opinion, and it isn't one of support for the president. And it's also one that I think is probably using the, look, our black pastors have deep pains from the civil rights era, the mistreatment of their parents, of themselves. They have those same scars. They are humans. I think someone is stoking the flames, poking the scabs of those hurts. And so I have a problem with that letter. The letter went to the White House. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But the point is that now pastors, Southern Baptists primarily, are being persuaded and being confused, being led into confusion about what's actually happening here. So, Les, that's my long, that's much longer than you had anticipated. Do you have a follow-up question?
Sandy, I think if the people that sat in the pews of Southern Baptist churches every Sunday knew who Russell Moore was, that if you just Google his name, Russell Moore, socialist, and started researching Russell Moore, they would find that he is a never-Trumper. He is a guy inside the Beltway, you said someone. But the other day your guest said that Russell Moore had slandered the president. And my question to you is, do you think that Russell Moore is actually slander? I think what he said is untrue, and I think it's slander. Could he not be prosecuted?
Well, all right. I'd have to really review everything he's ever said about the president to comment on whether he slandered him or not. But on the issue of whether there's a legal standing to slander, most public people cannot sue for slander. If you're a public personality, people can say pretty much whatever they want to about you and get away with it. So that's the answer to that, Les. But I do think that people do need to be aware of Russell's background, of where he's coming from. I don't think he's a trustworthy voice. I will go on record as saying that. I think he's an untrustworthy voice. I think he has undue influence, and I think he has dangerous influence. So that's how I feel about it, Les. Ask me what I think. All right, so thanks a lot. I appreciate you asking the question, and I really appreciate you listening. Let's go to Valerie in Alabama. Good morning, Valerie.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm very good. Thank you.
Well, my comment is about the penalty for not having health insurance. I am self-employed. My husband is employed, and he does have health insurance. Our children are covered under a state insurance because we qualify for it, and we do pay a premium for them as well. But as for me, I refuse to buy it because it's $6,000 a year in premiums with a $6,000 deductible that I'm never going to meet because I don't go to the doctor.
That's unbelievable.
I am hit with, well, the first year I got hit with $267, no big deal. The next year was $516. The next year was $887. This last year was $1,100.
Your penalty.
My
for penalty. Not buying Obamacare, right? Well, you know, Valerie, you do understand
right.
that when they wrote that law, under President Obama, they wrote it in such a way that all the good things would happen right away and all the bad things would happen after he left office. And so now
right.
now we're entering into the bad things and worse. So
what I don't understand is why can't they just wipe this completely off? And I honestly, and I've said it a million times, I really don't care what they do with it. Just get rid of the mandate because it's killing people like me.
Yeah, Valerie, I'm so sorry. I know. And people who are, you know, have serious problems or medical conditions can't go with, don't think they can go without insurance. It's like, you know, here's the point, Valerie. They made this, they keep saying, all these people covered, millions of people will not be covered. All right, covered doesn't mean anything. If you have a piece of paper and you have to pay $6,000 a year for your premium, and then you have to pay a $6,000 deductible before you can see any kind of payment for anything that you do, that's not, it doesn't help that you have a piece of paper that says you're covered. Doesn't help. And so it's all been a sham, Valerie, and I have to tell you, it's been a way to impoverish the middle class. If you will track all of the policies of Barack Obama in the 8 years he was president, the left, because that's what communist socialists do, they want to destroy the middle class. We are the group of people that fight back, that care, that have spunk. We are the block of people that cause them the most trouble. That's what you see with the people of the support Trump. And it's the middle class that is the target. It always was under Marxism. So this is not by accident. And to your point specifically, I do think they are trying to get rid of that penalty. I actually thought they had, but I'm not an expert on that. We'll have to ask someone. God willing, we're going to get this thing sorted out. Valerie, thank you. 888-589-8840 is the number. 888-589-8840. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Ever wonder how youngsters come home from college with ridiculous ideas? Here's an example. Iowa State University International Studies professor James Stroman assigned students to write an essay that gives an historical account of 9/11 from the terrorist's perspective. He wants students to get in touch with how might Al-Qaeda or a non-Western historian describe the event. If you've noticed, love for our country seems to wane among some of our young people. Perhaps it's due to professors using academia as a cover to indoctrinate them to empathize with terrorists.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Why do people who like Brian Fisher tune in to Focal Point?
To hear what he's going to say next.
Let's go to James from Indiana.
There are so many ways to catch the Focal Point program on one of our almost 200 stations. Live streaming at AFR.net, podcast, phone apps, and if you'd prefer to watch the show, we have Facebook Live on our Focal Point Facebook page. Why do people who don't like Brian Fisher tune in to Focal Point?
To hear what he's going to say next.
Join me weekday afternoons at 1 Central.
Did you know that as a federal or state employee, you have the opportunity to support the American Family Association through the Combined Federal Campaign? You can designate a deduction each month to the organization of your choice. And AFA, number 12037, is one of the few on the list fighting for your family. Help us continue to do so by designating your CFC contribution to 12037 when completing the CFC form in your payroll department.
I'm so excited about all the wonderful things that God has done in my life. And I'm going to tell this one one in 1999 when I fell and broke my back going down the steps in a hurry with three of the boys' shirts to pop in the dryer in the school uniform and running down, and I missed the last two steps and I fell and broke my back. I really had a rough time to get. I had the peace of the Lord through it all. And I did not have to have surgery. It just came back on its own. It blended in. I tell you, it's a miracle how that was. And I've not had troubles with my back, a little arthritis, and I just want to praise the Lord. Thank God for AFR.
Ensure that we impact even more lives by partnering with us during our three-day Share-a-thon starting October 17th. Listener-supported American Family Radio for your family.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Facts are, as they say, stubborn things. Some supporters of the Obama bomb nuclear deal with Iran want President Trump to perpetuate it, claiming the mullahs have not materially breached its terms. Yet what could be more of a material breach than the Iranian regime's documented practice of preventing international inspectors from visiting sites suspected of covertly continuing nuclear weapons-related activities? Presumably, that's being done to conceal other material breaches, but it's enough for the president to find Tehran is not in compliance. Since no good can come from further legitimating and enabling Iran's hostile and increasingly dangerous mullahocracy, Mr. Trump must also certify another harsh fact. The Obama bomb deal is not in the United States' vital security interests either. Given such facts, it would be bizarre and irresponsible for us to remain bound by this fatally flawed so-called political understanding. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you, and it's a pleasure always to speak to you, always. Let me just say that yesterday in Congress, I've been hitting Congress pretty hard, at which I'm going to continue to do because they need to be hit. They have done some really bad things, and they have failed to do. I was in a meeting yesterday, and they were talking about they've been naming post offices. That's what the House has been doing. I think they've named six post offices. This is what they're doing with your dollars and your time, because this is an election year, you know, and they wouldn't want to really actually do anything. So they're not doing anything. And so we're coming up on the 15th of October, and that is the date by which President Trump has to decide whether to certify or not certify the Iran deal. He has to certify it every, 60, 90 days, something like that. It's a big source of contention because most people I know think that Iran, there's no way we should ever have gotten this terrible deal. And by the way, thank you, Senator Corker. Thank you for making the way by lying on the Sunday shows about what your Corker-Cardin Amendment would do, promising us that it would keep us safe and they would stop developing nuclear weapons. All a sham. Meanwhile, back he's making money off of the deal. This is the kind of thing that's going on in D.C. It's just appalling. So the president has to recertify by October the 15th, and I thought he wasn't going to certify. I heard last night some think he is going to recertify. So I have to officially say to you, I don't know if he's going to or not. But there were some hearings yesterday in Congress, and I think it's Lee Zeldin from New York who's questioning Jake Sullivan, who was a former Obama staffer who pushed the Iran deal through, on where the Iranians are getting, where is the Iranian uranium? I want you to hear this exchange. Let's listen.
You said earlier that 98% of Iran's enriched uranium was shipped out of the country, correct?
I did.
Where's the uranium?
The uranium is in Russia.
How do you know that?
Because there's a supply and accountancy procedure to ensure where the uranium is collected in Iran, moved, and then stored.
You know where the uranium is? That's news. That's newsworthy. Because nobody else does. And ironically, if we credit the uranium with being in Russia, it would be an interesting departure from the individuals who don't trust Russia on anything except apparently where the Iranian fissile material might be. And I guess that's convenient.
Yeah, so you get the point. So Jake Sullivan is promising that the uranium is in Russia, and Lee is saying, how do you know this? Oh, because, you know, the Russians tell us. So you don't trust Russia on anything, but you trust them on where the uranium that the Iranians are using to develop their nuclear weapons is. You trust them on that. It is really ironic, and you see the state of affairs. That's why we're fighting the way we are. That's why we're being diligent, and that's why we're going to be doing it differently in 2018, right? We're going to pay attention to those candidates. We're going to find out who we can trust, and we are not going to reelect the people who sit in those seats who are either doing bad things or doing nothing. You pick your poison, whichever is worse. And so, all right, let's go to the phones. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Dan in North Carolina. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Am I on?
You're on.
Cool. And so I wanted to point out one thing real quick. This whole Imran Awad scandal, it's extremely obvious as a foreign intelligence coup. It's not subtle in the least. It's obvious. It has ISI, Inter-Service Intelligence Agency, fingerprints on it. In fact, it's so non-subtle, they might as well just have sent the DNC a thank you card. It's extremely obvious. And it's so obvious at this point that I don't know why it's being called anything else. Really, the actual question, I would say, is the loyalty to the United States of the Americans who were involved with it. That's the real question. It's exceedingly obvious that the Pakistani nationals involved were non-official cover agents for ISI. That's blatantly obvious. The only real question at this point is the loyalty to the United States of the Americans who were involved with them.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, Dan. And, of course, you know that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it was her IT guys, technically. They were hers, although they ended up handling, I don't know the numbers, but it was, I think, 40, 50 Democrats in the House. Plus, they had access to the information of many of the Republicans, including Intelligence Committee members. It's very dangerous. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz went to the mat to defend these guys. This is a scandal that, a scandal. I still don't think that captures it. This is a national security breach that nobody wants to talk about. Certainly, Paul Ryan doesn't want to talk about it. Why not? Why wouldn't he expose this? Shout it from the housetops. Hold hearings. Expose what's going on. Why not? I can't answer that. And yet that's what's happening. So I think, Dan, someone has pointed out, this is really bad news, that this represents a breakdown, a complete and total breakdown of our intelligence services. What are they doing? Why aren't they investigating this? Why does this not matter? Why are they spending millions and thousands on some potential connection between the Trump campaign and the Russians, but not 5 seconds on this? It's a very good question, and that's the reason we have to root out the corruption in Washington, replace them, and get people in there that we can trust. Dan, I appreciate your comments. You're spot on. All right, let's talk to Mary in Mississippi. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I just enjoy your program so much, and I just have a couple of things to say.
Okay.
One is, in talking to David from Texas, I will gladly put up money for the border, for the wall, and I think millions of Americans would. I would gladly contribute to it. And also, we get something, it seems like every week, maybe more than once a week, asking for money for the RNC. I don't want to give them money. I don't like a thing they're doing. They're not supporting the president. I don't want to give them anything. Is that wrong?
Well, Mary, you can. No, it's not wrong. You have. There's nothing sacred or religious about giving to any party. So, no, you have a right to give your money where you think is best. And you may not have heard me say, but I'll repeat that the money flow to the Republican establishment as the bottom has dropped out of it. To Karl Rove's entity, to Senator McConnell's PAC, leadership PAC, the bottom is dropping out. The donors, the big money donors that have fueled the establishment Republicans for so very long have had it. They are fed up. They've gone on record as saying, we're not doing that anymore. You spent what? I hear the figure all over the map. I'll just say $8 million in Alabama to defeat Justice Roy Moore. You spent $8 million of our dollars down there to do that? And so the bottom is dropping out. So what's happening is Steve Bannon, formerly at the White House, now back as editor-in-chief of Breitbart, is forming a new entity. And a lot of those big money donors are going to that new entity whose name I can't recall. I'm not sure he's named it yet. But they are in the process of trying to recruit some really fine candidates around the country. Now, of course, who those are going to be and whether we can support them or not, we'll see. What I'd like to see is I would really like to see a unified effort by all conservative groups of all stripes to get behind these candidates and to make sure that we can remove from office the people that have occupied that space way too long. And so, Mary, long answer to you. I think what I would do if I were you, this is what I really, really, really wish you would do. I wish that you would look at the landscape as things develop here, figure out who you really want to help, an individual person, and give your money to them, maybe more than one person's, and target it, give it, because these... It's kind of the situation is fluid in terms of funding for some of these conservative candidates, like Justice Moore, Judge Moore in Alabama. Mitch McConnell's PAC and the PACs associated with him have now, although they said right after Judge Moore won the nomination that he was the nominee and they would support him. Now they say there was a newswire service, I can't recall the name of it, but I read it yesterday that they will not be giving him any money. So he's only like 6 or 8 points ahead of the Democratic candidate. So who's going to help him with this this campaign? Who's going to help him with this general campaign? I don't know. So you might want to think of that. You might want to look in your own state and figure out who you're going to support and give your money to that candidate. That's what I would do. And I would also, you know, get on a plane or get in a car and drive across country and help other candidates. I think of, Delegate Bob Marshall in Virginia, who is the guy in Virginia who supported the marriage amendment, who sponsored it, the guy who's been the champion of pro-lifers in Virginia for a few decades. He has been a champion in Virginia, and now he's being he also sponsored the bathroom bill, preventing bathrooms from letting men use women's bathrooms and it's vice versa, transgender bathrooms. So now he's being targeted by a transgender candidate who is receiving millions of dollars in contributions from people who want more rights for transgenders all over the country. So there, here's little Bob Marshall, who's been slugging away in Virginia faithfully all these years. Now suddenly, millions of dollars going up against him with a transgender candidate to defeat him. He needs help. So I'm just giving you ideas of people that could use your energies and your dollars, and you can make a difference, even if it's not in your home state. So that's the long answer, Mary. Any other thing, any comment on that from you?
No, that is a great answer, and I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you too.
Okay, thanks,
and
Mary.
I pray God bless you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Let's go to Kathy in Texas. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. Forgive my ignorance, but I'm trying to learn. So with the senators only working a few days here and there, who so to speak, is their boss? Who can change that and make them work more? And then the second question about that is also the filibuster rule. Who is responsible or what can be done to get rid of that?
Okay, for the first one, you are their boss, Kathy. You and I. They don't answer to anyone besides the American people. At the top of the food chain would be Mitch McConnell, the leader in the Senate, and in the House, of course, be the Speaker, and then the Republican Party leaders. But the elected officials answer to the people. That's the answer. And the way we get them to start actually working, actually doing what they promised, is that we get them out. We go on a concerted effort to replace them. And that's what we're doing, and that's what we have to do. And the second thing on the filibuster, that is a Senate rule. It's not a law. It's a Senate rule. They have like Robert's Rules of Order, if you've ever been in a committee meeting. I call this meeting to order. All those in favor? It's just rules that help an entity run. There's nothing sacred about it. And the filibuster rule was put into place. It wasn't constitutional. It's not part of our Constitution. It was a rule they put into place to protect the minority. Without going into a great amount of detail, it can be changed. There's nothing sacred about that rule, and the person that's not changing it is Mitch McConnell. He has changed it for judicial nominations, but he won't change it for legislation because he fancies that if he is ever in the minority leadership again, he can use that to have a voice when the Democrats are in control. But, of course, we all know that when the Democrats are in control, they will do away with the filibuster. They will not care about Senate tradition. So it really is feckless. It's irresponsible. And, Kathy, I would argue it's another way for the Republican leadership to have an excuse for not doing the things that they promised that they would do, like do away with Obamacare, like enforce our immigration laws, and fill in the blanks with all the other things. So that's the answer. Kathy, thanks for calling. Let's go to Kay in Texas. Kay, you have the last word very quickly.
Yes, Sandy, thank you for your wonderful ministry. I praise you and listen to you every day. My comment and question is that in ministry, my husband and I have noticed that so many Christians are living worldly lifestyles versus biblical lifestyles. And therefore, they have very little time to give to God or country. And what can be done to wake up all of these Christians across our nation to get more involved in local, state, and national politics?
Let me jump in, okay, because we're running out of time, as you can hear the music. I think that, American Family Association has been playing that role for decades, approaching the 40th year anniversary, as a matter of fact. And that's what we do on the air here every day. And so I would say have people refer them. AFR Talk is the app. People can get it anywhere in the world, and they can listen, and they can be informed, and they can get involved. And mostly, of course, we all need to rededicate our lives to holy living before the Lord. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.